For those of you who don't know me, my name is Joel Zwier. Wasn't in the bulletin, so just in case anyone doesn't know me, I'm a member here at Assembly. I was asked to share this sermon this morning, or talk. I'm not much of a sermonizer. And really, when I think about it, talking to Mennonites about helping other people is like kind of like preaching to the choir. But apparently, the program committee believes that the choir needs a message today. So there you have it. Helping others is not something that is exclusive to Christians. Surely we can recognize that there's a strong biblical foundation, Jewish foundation, to caring and giving and helping other people. And we also know that in other religions around the world, this very human desire to reach out and touch other people and help people is a characteristic and a quality that exists across religion and culture. But our text is the Bible, and therefore I will dig a little bit deeper into what the Bible says about helping and caring for others. Exodus 22, don't oppress aliens. You were aliens in Egypt. Leviticus 19, love aliens as yourself. You were aliens in Egypt. Deuteronomy 10, God defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the alien. And this is my favorite. Deuteronomy 24, don't deprive the alien and the fatherless of justice or take the cloak of the widow. When harvesting, leave the forgotten sheaf. Only beat your olive trees once. Only harvest your grapes once. Think about that. Kind of seems like God is micromanaging agricultural practices, but they were an agrarian society, and it has some practical implications. Think of Naomi and Ruth. Ruth went out and gleaned. It would be in fields like this where the forgotten sheep was, or the olive trees, that she would have been gleaning. And she needed to supply her mother-in-law, Ruth, and her with food to put on the table. They had no one else to defend them. So the passage continues, leave those remains for the alien, fatherless, and widow, so God may bless you. Are we seeing a pattern here? A pattern of a God whose deep heart of love reaches out and touches people and gathers those that are vulnerable and needy. From the New Testament, passages already read, Luke 4, Jesus' statement of purpose, preaching good news to the poor, freedom for prisoners, recovery of sight for the blind, and released for the oppressed. Lots of theologians want to sort of turn that into spirituality, and that probably is partly true, but I think it, based on Jesus' ministry, it's equally true that Jesus is talking about real oppressed people, real people who needed to regain sight. People who were poor that needed to know that somebody was on their side. 1 Timothy 6. The wealthy are told not to be arrogant, but to put their hopes on God and not on what they own. James 2, which was read. What we believe cannot be divorced from the way we live. We've got to be coherent and consistent in what we think and believe and how we live life every day. So in summary, over the arc of the entire Bible, we can see that God clearly has a heart for the poor, for the needy, for the vulnerable in society. And that did not just stop when the Bible was gathered and completed. It continues in our time today and our days right now. This is why we, as followers of Jesus, must take a stance on the side of helping the poor, of walking beside those who suffer injustice, and work for reconciliation in our world. So, how should we help other people? Some of these ideas are drawn from the books When Helping Hurts, How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself, and Walking with the Poor, Principles and Practices of Transformational Development. Some principles for helping others. Do no harm. Sounds kind of like a no-brainer, right? Well, I'll tell you a story that I participated in many years ago. I was seconded to a very qualified and competent Honduran community development organization. I worked as an agronomist alongside of the other national agronomists in that agency. I'm thinking of one village. We introduced good seed variety, taught good farming practices. The year was perfect, timely rains just at the right time. The corn harvest was enormous. Local farmers had more cash on hand than they had ever experienced in their lives before. However, two temporary bars set up in the community, and many farmers went on a drunken spree for 2 or 3 weeks. When all the money dried up, the bars left. I got to thinking, in retrospect, I wonder if the wives and children of those farmers were so excited about that corn harvest that year. So, you know, as development workers, we were doing what we thought was the right thing. We just missed that little piece at the end of teaching some basic economics, you know, do something good with what you have, add a room on to your house, save money for next year's crop system, whatever. Didn't happen. So helping people is not an easy thing to do. Avoid paternalism. Don't do things for people that they can do for themselves. Years ago, again, I don't know why my examples come from Honduras, but I was reflecting on my distant past. Maybe because I met my wife in Honduras, I don't know. Anyway, the Honduran government received a grant to install grain drying and grain storage facilities in a whole number of villages in a particular valley. No one ever asked the villages if they needed or wanted the project. It happened. Somebody made money from putting those structures up. The facilities sat unused. My supervisor, Ovidio Flores, and I were traveling through that valley, and I was commenting on this enormous waste. And he looked at me and he said, "No, Joel, it's not a waste. These villagers, at some point, will repurpose these structures for something that they want to do. Something good will happen from all of this." Interesting perspective. Basic methodologies for helping others. Relief is the first step. It's appropriate as a response to natural and human-created disasters. A temporary response and use of resources that is best channeled through local organizations. Rehabilitation, second methodology, kicks in when the basic emergency is over. Instead of doing for others, we do with them. Options are explored, decisions are made to reinforce local gifts and abilities. And then community development. Individuals and organizations are empowered to find appropriate and sustainable ways to improve their lives, income, environment, and organizations. Now, it sounds real good. Relief, rehab, development. Unfortunately, they kind of meld into each other, and so knowing the wisdom comes in, knowing when to switch from one to the other, when it's appropriate to do that. Several weeks ago, Pastor Laura briefly spoke about what she was learning in these seminars she's doing down in Warsaw. And she really didn't give it a name, and this name, it's called asset-based community development. That's what she was talking about. And it's not the first time we've heard this concept at assembly. But the important thing is here, instead of seeing communities as problems to be fixed, we identify and mobilize the capabilities, skills, resources of the people. People and their communities are seen as full of possibilities given to them by God. As much as possible, you need to look for resources and solutions to come from within the community, not from the outside. You seek to build or rebuild relationships among local people, organizations, associations, in the neighborhoods or in the community, churches, schools, and government. God's intention for these organizations is to be interconnected and complementary. And outside resources are only brought in when local resources are insufficient to solve pressing needs. Don't do too much too soon. Do not undermine local capacity or initiative. It's a tough thing for Mennonites, you know, to sit back and wait, because we are kind of given, it's in our DNA to solve problems, to fix things. We're good at that. And sometimes that's needed, but sometimes just waiting until things emerge might be the better path. Working in this manner and working through organizations that the 2% committee that work like this respects people and empowers them and their organizations towards lasting change. I quote from the book When Helping Hurts. The good news of the gospel of the kingdom is that Jesus is not just sustaining all things, but he is reconciling all things. One day, all of the assets, the natural resources, the individuals, the neighborhood associations, schools, businesses, governments, and what have you, will all be liberated from their bondage to decay, per Romans 8:21. Jesus Christ created, sustains, and is redeeming assets in poor communities, and I interject here, all communities, Goshen included. As the body of Christ, the church should seek to do the same. Some stories from programs that the 2% committee has funded. You read in the bulletin, so much money was given to such and such an organization. Let's hear some of these stories that come from a few of these organizations. One close to my heart, La Casa. I happen to work there, so that's my disclaimer. This is one of my clients. Names have been changed to protect their identity. Mark qualified for a matched savings account for home ownership, where he saved $1,600, and his $1,600 was matched by the program with $4,000. That $5,600 allowed him to come to closing with down payment and closing costs mostly covered. The saving part went really well for Mark. He participated in financial coaching, getting collections removed from his credit and eliminating a lot of debt so that he could improve his debt-to-income ratio took 2 years for Mark. Mark just closed on a home at the end of July, and he and his family purchased their very first home in Elkhart. Internationally, the Association for a More Just Society, a Honduran justice and advocacy organization. 400 families from the community of La Magnolia came to the association. These 400 families had bought into this development where they were purchasing lots and they built homes. And to their understanding, when their lot was paid for, they would get title to that land, and then the house that they had already built on it would be totally and completely theirs. The developer kind of was hemming and hawing over a long period of time. People got uneasy and they contacted the association. And the Association for a More Just Society provided legal support, and the developer now faces trial for what he was doing, holding these titles back from these people that had in good faith purchased the property and paid for it. That may sound easy in our society and our culture, but in Honduras, for an organization, for a community, and for an organization to take on a person of power in the economy is a risky thing to do and not always successful. So it's a really big deal to have an advocacy organization like the Association for a More Just Society. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, I believe one of their previous executive directors was assassinated by, no one knows, but it is assumed to be people of power in the country. I mean, talk about giving all for a mission of an organization. Chain Reaction, local organization we have supported. Recently, we stopped off to tighten up something on our bike at the end of a ride, and I met Bill. Bill earned his bicycle by doing 10 hours of volunteer labor in the bike shop. So he was given a salary or an hourly pay, which he never received, but it was towards the purchase of this bicycle. The bike Bill has is his only transportation every day of the month, all year. IUSB Leadership Academy. This was probably a one-time request we received this spring. This is a program at IUSB that helps high school seniors, mainly of color, who are first-generation college students, learn skills and earn 6 hours of college credit before entering their freshman year. Late in the application process, the program discovered that two young women were DACA recipients, and the state of Indiana does not allow DACA recipients to receive state education funds to be used. So the program coordinator felt like these young women were so far into the process and had been accepted that she chose to turn to area churches. Assembly was one of them. And we helped cover the cost of, I think it was $1,500 per student for that six-week period. A real equity thing, a real justice thing. Standing beside these young women, I'm told they were from Concord High School, giving them skills as they head into college and 6 hours of credit before they hit their first classroom. A real big leg up for these young women and young people. NIJC. Nothing I could say could add anything to Lisa Koop's NPR interview of this week. We believe in them. We support them. If you haven't heard the interview on NPR, listen to it. Totally awesome. Lisa really rocks. Last but not least, Mennonite Central Committee. I read about a cholera prevention program in Haiti. 10,000 people have died of cholera since it was introduced by UN peacekeeping troops. 1 million people out of maybe 9 or 10 million in the country have had cholera but survived. So in the Wopisa-Gabriel area, MCC helped local communities build 600 latrines. Additionally, water treatment tablets, water filtration systems, and buckets were made available. Training was given on building, maintaining, and using a latrine, and how to properly wash fruit and vegetables. In 2018, there were zero deaths in the area due to cholera. Think of the families and who didn't lose a child or a parent to cholera. Really, really big deal. In closing, I wonder what the 2% committee could do for us if we all direct deposited our 2% offerings from our paychecks or our bank accounts. What more could we do? I wonder how the organizations that we support, the communities they work in, the individuals and families that live there, could be so empowered to better reflect God's kingdom of shalom. With us or without us, God is healing and redeeming all of the communities in our world. As much as possible, and as often as we can, shouldn't we join in? Thank you.